You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Until recently, the Public Works Protection Act was a little-known law in Ontario. It gave the police the right to search individuals attempting to enter public buildings like courthouses. But the police at the G20 summit interpreted the act in a much broader way. They used the law to arrest anyone coming within 5 meters of the G20 security fence. They even used the law to carry out searches kilometers away from the security fence. Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair later admitted that the law did not give police such powers. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association says that this is one of a number of fundamental violations of civil rights that occurred at the summit, and they've been calling for an independent investigation into police actions. Anthony Navanilan is a legal counsel with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. He was present in Toronto during the G20 summit, and he joins me by phone from Toronto. Good morning, Anthony, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I understand that an investigation into police conduct has been announced recently. It's going to be conducted by the Ontario Independent Police Review Director, or OIPRD. Tell us a little bit about this organization with the strange pronounced acronym.
It's a mouthful, I know. OIPRD is actually a new creature on the scene in Ontario. The Office of the Independent Police Review Director was only created actually in 2008, and he only opened his doors November 2009. So the G20 summit is somewhat of a trial by fire, baptism by fire, sorry, for this new organization. They were designed following a report to the Attorney General that said it's too difficult for individuals to make complaints to the police. Those complaints are not being investigated properly, and we need an independent watchdog agency to do that work. So OIPRD came about as a result of that, and like I said, the G20 is kind of the first time they are facing a major police crisis in Ontario. This is probably the most significant police crisis since the Upper Wash Provincial Park invasion. So OIPRD right now, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, announced that they were going to do what's called a systemic review of the G20 policing. That essentially means that they've received so many complaints, and they said they've received upwards of 1,200 complaints since April, so that includes both pre- and post-G20. They've received so many of them that they're going to investigate them on a systemic level. They can no longer treat these as isolated incidences or simply bad apples. It's an indication that at a policy level, something might have gone wrong.
And what would that include? What kinds of behavior by the police is this systemic review likely to consider?
Well, when they announced systemic review, the Independent Police Review Director identified a series of incidences that he wanted to look at. One was unlawful arrests, including mass arrests. As you might be aware, over 1,000 people were arrested in Toronto within 48 hours. That's the largest mass arrest in Canadian history. He wanted to look at unlawful searches. He wanted to look at the conditions in the detention center. And he wanted to look at the intimidation of protesters. So these are different kind of pockets of unlawful activity we saw going on across Toronto during the G20 summit. And like I said, because it's a systemic review, the police review director is of the opinion that there's ample evidence to show that this was occurring at a policy level or at a quite deliberate and intentional level by the police. It wasn't just isolated pockets of unlawful activity or illegal activity.
So this would include legislation that the provincial cabinet introduced and which the police interpreted in ways which it wasn't intended to be applied, etc., those kind of things?
Well, the unlawful searches and the unlawful arrests would both include the conduct of the police under the Public Works Protection Act. Now, that legislation was actually first adopted in 1939. It was adopted 2 weeks after the outbreak of the Second World War. So we are of the opinion at CCLA that this is kind of ancient legislation that is in no way incompatible with our modern constitutional order. But for some reason, the police and the premier decided to drag it out of kind of the back bookshelves and dust it off and pass it really in late night. I think they passed 180 orders in councils in early June, and buried in there was the order declaring most of downtown Toronto to be a public works protection area, which meant the police suddenly had powers to stop, search, and arrest anyone within that zone. And like you said earlier, the police went even further and said we could stop and search people outside the zone as well.
So there are a lot of people in government as well as heading the police who have an interest in, I would say, trying to restrict the scope of the investigation of OPIRD?
Well, I will say the Independent Police Review Director is probably coming under a lot of pressure from all different angles. Like I said, he's operating under a very new statute, and this is the first time we've had a systemic review under the statute. So what the term systemic review means is anyone's guess, and it's up for grabs, really. So, of course, there are groups like CCLA on one side saying, you know, to the Police Review Director, you have very considerable powers. He actually has powers under the Public Inquiries Act in Ontario. He can summon witnesses. He can compel the production of documents. He can actually search buildings, public buildings. So he has pretty substantial powers, and we think that, you know, the legislature didn't give him those powers to sit on them. They gave them to him so he could employ them. Of course, there are other groups, perhaps governments, police unions, who are, you know, they perhaps have a genuine concern that the role of the Police Review Director is not to micromanage the police, it is not to, you know, become such a second-guess shoulder over, kind of over the shoulder that it impedes the proper policing. But I think most people agree that what happened in Toronto during the G20 was not just, as I said before, a few isolated incidences. There was something very wrong, in our opinion, quite unconstitutional about what happened.
And am I right to infer that it is a single individual that is conducting this inquiry?
Well, under the statute, the powers of the Police Review Director are vested in the individual, the Independent Police Review Director. He, of course, has an office that has staff. He has actually put in a request to the Attorney General of Ontario to employ more staff, specifically for the G20 inquiry. And in Ontario, we actually have a hiring freeze amongst the provincial government, so he's running up against some friction in terms of that request. But he does have a staff, but they've kind of been very open about it and quite candid that they are overwhelmed with G20 complaints and that they need more resources.
Is there anything that you would want OIPIRD to review that hasn't been identified so far as an area of their concern?
Well, we actually wrote to OIPIRD 2 weeks before the announcement requesting this very systemic review, and I set out 5 areas, and 4 of them are included in the review. We're very happy about that. The 5th one, though, was the dispersal of peaceful protest by force, sometimes with unannounced force. So we think that's a very serious concern. It has large ramifications for freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, which are fundamental constitutional rights in Canada. So we would like the Independent Police Review Director to look at those incidences as well. We put the request into him in writing, and so we're waiting to hear back from him. But like I said, I think they're somewhat treading water amongst all the complaints over there right now.
So that would include shooting people with rubber bullets?
There was the use of rubber bullets, I believe, outside the Eastern Avenue Detention Center. There's something that they call muzzle shots, which are, quote-unquote, individual doses of tear gas. There were other projectiles that were difficult to identify. There were flat plastic discs that were fired. So these are all very concerning and alarming for us. And in particular, at a lot of instances, you had no warning to the public there. And of course, under the criminal code, there must be a warning. You've ever heard the expression, read them the Riot Act. There actually is a provision in the criminal code called the Riot Act. And it's a warning to people that you must disperse or the crowd will be dispersed by force. And it's very important to give people the opportunity to leave if the police want to use force. And that warning was either never given in some instances or was simply not heard by anyone if the police say it was given. So that's very alarming for us.
The Canadian Civil Liberties Association, with which you work, is also calling for a federal investigation. How would that be different from the one being carried out by OIPIRD?
Well, OIPIRD, of course, only looks at police conduct, and they only look at the conduct of police in Ontario. So, of course, there was more than 1,000 RCMP officers and CSIS agents that were involved in the G20, and their review is in no way, or their conduct, sorry, is no way reviewed by OIPIRD. But we're not just concerned about policing, of course. This is a federal summit. $1 billion worth of federal money was committed towards it, and the Integrated Security Unit, which is ultimately responsible for policing, was headed up by RCMP, which is, of course, a federal agency. So we think Ottawa has a lot of answers to give on these questions, and all roads kind of lead to Ottawa at the end of the day. And so for politicians in Ottawa to kind of sit back there and say, let the Premier of Ontario deal with it, let the Toronto Police Chief deal with it, you know, that's kind of letting the people on the line take the heat when the real decision makers get to sit back 400 kilometers away.
What response have you had so far for your call for a federal review?
So far, there's been a lot of silence, but of course, the House is not sitting right now. So in September, when the House sits, there might be a different tune. The Public Safety Committee, which the G20 Summit Security would fall under their mandate, had an emergency sitting in July to deal with the G20 Summit, and they were unable to pass a resolution to have an immediate review, but they agreed to put it back as the first agenda when they returned in the fall. First item on the agenda, sorry. So I think once the House sits again, you'll see renewed pressure to have some kind of review. We're not asking necessarily for a public inquiry, but we are asking for an independent inquiry.
I understand also that there are a number of people who have suffered from the police actions, that a class action and individual lawsuits have been launched. Can you tell us anything about that level of response?
There has been a class action that was actually launched on Friday, so just yesterday, in fact. It's a class action that names about 1,000 other people who have a similar claim. So a class action works in the way that everyone has the exact same claim. So instead of 1,000 people suing, one person sues on behalf of everyone. And if they win their claim, everyone wins. So it's a more efficient way of getting justice. So one person who was detained at Queen of Spadina, those people were detained in the torrential rains for 4 hours and then taken to a detention center for another 18 to 20 hours in some instances. No contact with lawyers. The conditions of that detention center were quite deplorable. And in the end, most people were released without charge. So they've brought a lawsuit now. Collectively, for the 1,000 people, they're asking for $45 million, which includes not just compensation, but also what we call punitive damages, which means moral damages, to say, I didn't just suffer from this conduct. This conduct was wrong.
Is it possible that OIPRD would say, well, we can't deal with certain things because they're appearing before the court in the form of lawsuits, or should they proceed as quickly as possible?
Well, the statute doesn't spell it out. OIPRD does ask you when you submit a complaint, is this before the courts? And, of course, in a criminal context, there is a concern about, say, self-incrimination, of course. So if you've been charged with, say, assaulting a police officer and you also want to make a complaint about the conduct of that police officer, there's a real concern you would disclose things to OIPRD that would be relevant to the criminal charge. But when there's a civil suit going on, there's another matter. Of course, the Attorney General of Canada is also a named defendant in that lawsuit, and so OIPRD's mandate is completely separate. OIPRD is a provincial body. But I think there will be, probably have to be some discussions with OIPRD about how does this lawsuit affect what we're doing. Of course, most of the complaints in the lawsuit were that the policy, the overarching, you know, the planned, the intentional acts of the police were what were unlawful. So it's not like the day-to-day interactions of the officers on the street. It's not the idea of, you know, a bad apple, which is usually what OIPRD is going after.
One last question. It's been difficult from at least this part of the country to get a sense of whether all the people who were arrested are freed now, and if they were, under what kind of bail conditions were imposed.
So, like I said before, over 1,000 people were arrested. Just under 270 of them were actually charged with an offense. So right away, about 750 were simply arrested, detained, and let go. Of the 270, the Crown only requested bail in a small handful, I think around 20 to 30. So that's another indication that they didn't consider the rest of the offenses serious enough to hold people in detention until the trial. Now, of those 25, only a very small handful, 3 or 4 or 5, I believe, have been denied bail, and all the bail hearings have been concluded. Now, that seems like a very simple number, denied bail, but then the ones who have been granted bail have been granted them on very strict conditions. So you have one of the so-called organizers of the violence on Saturday on the G20 summit. She was released on $140,000 bail. So that's the kind of bail you usually see for a homicide charge. So to see it on an offense like indictable mischief is quite alarming, I think, perhaps even disproportionate to the offense. Almost everyone released is placed under house arrest as well. So house arrest means essentially you're not allowed to leave your home except perhaps to go to work or to go to court appointments or medical appointments. So even though you were quote-unquote granted bail, you are essentially under a form of imprisonment.
Are these also things that could be investigated by OIPRD?
OIPRD wouldn't have a mandate to cover court orders. The proper review process there is to appeal it, and several people, lawyers have indicated they are going to appeal the bail conditions. The other thing that's much of concern to us is part of the bail conditions for problem with everyone who was released was an undertaking not to participate in any public protest, any demonstration, or any political organizing. So, of course, you have a constitutional right to those activities. So we are very concerned where we have judges in their orders denying people their fundamental constitutional rights. Now, those orders, of course, could be more tailored to focus at G20 political organizing in Toronto. We think those might be more reasonable limits to impose on a bail. But these blanket sweeping orders, no political organizing, no demonstrating, no protesting, we think those orders are far overbroad and, frankly, might be unconstitutional.
So people, for example, could not even organize in their own defense.
Exactly. And even more simply, there's, on Facebook, there's a lot of Facebook groups now that are popping up about the G20. If you hit the like button, or if you add a group to your list, are you organizing now? Are you in violation of your bail? So those terms are very broad. They're hard to define, and so they're hard to comply with as well. But that's another great example you gave. Perhaps someone wants to have a rally in defense of their own charges.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, and we'll keep in touch on this case. Obviously, it's got a long way to go.
It'll be with us for a while, I think. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye, Anthony.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Anthony Navanilan. He is a legal counsel with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association.